Welcome to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman, and joining me today will be Jan Schenaeus and Dan Crawford from Hamman.com. This episode, we are going to discuss the massive 2-0 win for Fulham against Norwich City at Carrow Road. We have much to discuss, but before we do anything else, I have to welcome the guys to the show. First, Mr. Janaeus, how you doing?
That woman at the start that says this show's been recorded, I'd like to date her. Do you know her?
Boy, Mick McCarthy's had a tough time of it lately, Giannis.
I do. I need a job, you know. I need a job. I need to work somewhere. I'll even work for Burton Albion.
Okay, very funny there, my friend. I look forward to doing this show with you. Mr. Crawford, how are you doing?
I'm very good.
Okay, very good. All right. Well, guys, let's not waste any more time. Let's talk about this huge win for Fulham, 2-0 at Carrow Road. And Dan, I'm just going to start right off with you. You were there. Just give me your overall thoughts on the win here today for Fulham.
Yeah, I was very pleased with the 3 points because for a while, I don't know about the two of you, but for a while, I didn't see it coming. Norwich started very well. They put us on the defensive, and I think Fulham struggled to get the usual rhythm and pattern of play that they like to employ. There are a few people who were off their game, and we had very little in the way of shooting chances. I think I can only remember one shot from Kearney and one shot from Mitrovic in the entirety of the first half. And, you know, Norwich didn't have too many shots on target, but they certainly looked more effective going forward. And we were all sort of looking around, wondering what was going to happen in the second half, whether we were actually going to show up. Fortunately, we did, and we took our chances. You remember, I think I spoke to you before the Sunderland game. We were talking about needing to be ruthless. This was the perfect example of being ruthless when we were on top. Norwich weren't, much like we weren't earlier in the season. And we were today, and we got 3 very good points in the end.
Absolutely, Dan. And it's funny because before I go to Giannis and get his thoughts on the match, his opening thoughts, I'm actually going to read comments from Daniel Farke. I got these quotes from the Norwich Evening News, because they kind of go with what you just said. I want to get your thoughts if he captured some of the stuff that you just mentioned here. So these are quotes from Daniel Farke, the head coach for Norwich City. This is what he had to say after the match. Quote, "We were able to prove once again we can play on this top level, but compliments to Fulham. They were more clinical. In general, the first 15 minutes we were struggling a bit because we changed our pressing behavior for this game and we had to adapt to that. Fulham were there with more possession without creating any real chances. Then after that, we were not just on the same level for me. We were the better side. Look at all the statistics. We won more duels. We had more shots on target, more chances. All in all, a game with 2 really good sides. But we have mentioned before, football is not fair and we were not able to score the first goal. Fulham were better in this topic. They had 3 situations the whole game. Angus came out of his goal too early and Christoph was able to block the shot. The other two, they score. Then it's difficult because Fulham is the best side in the league right now. They will be promoted, I'm pretty sure. I was happy with our performance." Okay, Dan, right back to you. Thoughts on the comments there from Daniel Farke after the match?
I quite like Farke. I think he's a good manager. And there's an argument to say Norwich have underachieved this season, but I think it'd be hard to lay all the blame at his door. I don't necessarily agree with him that they were the better side for 75 minutes. If he'd have said 45 minutes, then I'd have had very little to disagree with him about. But, you know, it's always reassuring to pick up these nice comments from opposing managers. But as for getting promoted or not getting promoted, it looks like we're going to have to do it the hard way again this season, Ross. We'll hold fire on that one.
Right. Very interesting comments by Daniel Farke. I think he's a quality head coach, and I thought those comments were interesting. That's why I wanted to bring them to the table. Giannis, thoughts on the match?
I thought the very good 3 points, firstly. But I thought the performance reminded me we looked like Brighton a year ago. You know, we we played our style of footy. We were disciplined most of the time. And when the big chances came, we capitalised. We found a way to win. And we did it in a very, very professional manner. And really, with Farquhar, the big thing, you know, tomorrow is obviously another day. And when he reflects on it, he'll know that he's got a squad of some very, very talented players. But the difference between Norwich City and us is that we're a better team. And it's really that collective spirit. And I thought I think that's been the biggest change in terms of the development of the team during this long unbeaten run, is that we've played much better as a team. You know, bar what happened against QPR a couple of weeks ago, we've found ways to win. And we've done it early, we've done it late, and we've done it all manner of ways. And today was another example. It was a really, really professional win by a very good side that kept its discipline, kept a clean sheet. And really, I don't really think Norwich City should have too many complaints in terms of they played their part, but in the end, the better side won.
Okay, excellent. Dan, I want to go right back to you. I want to talk to you both about this because Giannis is just talking about that Norwich City didn't play together as a team. I think, Giannis, is that where you're going at, that they didn't play together as a unit?
I think that's been their problem all year. I mean, if you look at their lineup and you look at the squad of players they got, you can even look at their bench. And you've got players like, you know, Oliveri and Hanley and Houlihan. These are good players. And they get into many, many starting lineups. It's not that they don't want a talent, but they struck me today as individualistic. Yep. And with our lineup, everybody plays their part with interchangeable parts. And a lot of that really has to go back down to Slava and the coaching staff. The 2 weeks that they're off for international break, you can see, you know, a lot of these players didn't go away, and you could see the proof of the pudding of preparation in terms of the way we executed today. So I think that's the difference why we're third and they're 13th.
Okay, very good. Dan, your thoughts on Giannis's analysis of Norwich City. One thing that stood out for me is that there was a good amount of, I guess you could say, poor decision-making by Norwich City throughout the match. They had opportunities to hurt us, and they would make a poor decision, bad passing. So what are your thoughts about Giannis talking about not playing together as a unit?
Yeah, I think there's quite a bit in what Giannis says. But for me, you've just hit the nail on the head there. It reminded me a lot of watching us when we were trying to fit together earlier in the season. There were lots of promising bits. It was just the final ball, the final pass, the finish. They weren't sort of ambitious enough or confident enough in the final third. Because had they been, they got into some very promising situations and they could have been 1 or 2 nil up at half-time on the balance of play. And you couldn't really have quibbled with that because combined with them playing some very enterprising football, we were below par for the first 45 minutes. And I would say significantly below the levels that Giannis is talking about that Fulham have set for some time now.
Okay, excellent there, Dan. All right, let's now talk about the starting 11 and the 18 overall. One significant change, and definitely want to get your thoughts on that. Dan, I want to go to you. What were your thoughts when you saw the starting 11 and the 18 and Ryan Sessegnon was on the bench?
Yeah, I was surprised. The first thing that leapt out at me, because I sort of look at it going down the list, was that Doi was still in at centre-back.
Yes.
Well, I thought that Kallas would come in and play as centre-half, particularly because Norwich were likely to go with a tall, physically imposing forward. And, you know, Kallas had proved his fitness between now and the QPR game by playing for the Czech Republic and playing quite well in that game. And then obviously Sessegnon being left out, I thought it was coming. I think he's looked a little tired in the last few weeks. And you have to remember
just the sheer workload of playing every league game for a 17-year-old. Right. You do have to manage these young players, and we've done so well to get so much out of Ryan Sessegnon for so long. That sometimes you just need to freshen it up and save him a little bit, particularly if we are going to have to play, you know, two, hopefully three very high-pressure matches on top of the 46 games of the league season in the playoffs. So I wasn't particularly surprised. The surprise for me came with the sort of disjointed nature of the performance, which I think you can only put down to being a bit rusty after the internationals.
Funny you mentioned that, Dan. I saw Savisa's comments after the match, and you actually wrote about it. Please go to hamian.com. Dan has three articles right up there about this match, and I would definitely recommend you reading all of them. But what did you make of Savisa's comments after the match? And I think he talked about the international break.
Yeah, I think what was interesting for me, because I hadn't thought about it like this necessarily, he was saying he only had one full day with all of his players because they were all coming back from various places. And it must be very difficult to prepare, you know, tactically, physically, and mentally for a fixture as a coach and a coaching staff when you don't have all the players at your disposal. There are obviously some things you can do, but it's not quite the same. And that was interesting for me. I mean, I do love Slavisa because you wonder how he always manages to tell you whether he's satisfied, very satisfied, or extremely satisfied.
Good point,
today,
Dan.
Today he was just satisfied.
That's right.
And that sort of, it says to me that here is a guy who won't get too carried away, even though we're on this magnificent run of form. Because he still expects 100% from all of his players. And I can well imagine, obviously, you know, there are no cameras in the dressing rooms at half time. I can well imagine that he gave them a piece of his mind at half time.
I totally agree with you, Dan. It's funny because I'm glad that you mentioned that. I'm looking at the head coach reaction, and the quote is, "I must be satisfied." That's very funny that you mentioned that. He basically says one of those three answers. I love that. Giannis, over to you. I want to get your thoughts on the starting 11 and the 18 overall. And we are talking a little bit about what Savisa said after the match and his head coach reaction, and Dan wrote about it on hamian.com. But I do have some quotes. I want to share them with you because it does talk about the international break, some of the comments. And this is what he had to say. I want to get your thoughts on it. This is from Savisa on formfc.com. Quote, "It's not easy after the international break, especially for us, a team who sends so many people around the world to play for their national team. I wasn't so comfortable today because I worked only one day with my team." Dan already mentioned that. Here's another quote from Savisa. "We showed we aren't fresh enough, a little bit tired at some moments of the game. But in the end, fortunately, we scored the goals and we won the points. In this moment is important for us." Okay. Giannis, feel free to share your thoughts on what Savisa talked about after the match and your thoughts on the 18.
Well, I don't think there's a manager, maybe with the exception of a few in the top two divisions, anywhere who's happy with international breaks, because it screws up the system. It really does, because you've got your pattern of practices and sessions, and then all of a sudden, you know, half or two-thirds of your squad go halfway around the world to play for their respective countries. And let's not forget, these were international friendlies. These weren't even, you know, World Cup qualifiers or whatever. So I agree with Dan. It would have been difficult for Slava, you know, to get them back on base. And we looked in the first half. We played okay first 20 minutes and in spits and pots spots, and then Norwich came back in the game. As for the starting lineup, I agree with Dan about the Sessegnon. I think he has looked a little tired of late, and I'm not sure how many games it is since he scored. So you know as well as I do my thoughts on Aite. I again will point. I mean, the Odoi thing, I was sort of pleased about because, you know, Odoi's done a sterling job, even though Callis is obviously chomping at the bit. The lineup looked pretty balanced. Unfortunately, no room again for Naiskens Cabana, which was very disappointing again. But overall, you look at what we had on the bench, and what we were going to throw, a pretty good Norwich side. I felt fairly comfortable, even, you know, with Piazon on the right, that we had enough. We knew the conditions were going to deteriorate. They did. But really, as we started to get to their worst, we stepped up again. And in the end, I thought we were very comfortable. The only thing, I suppose, for me, negative out of the game was probably the chippiness in the last 10 or 12 minutes where it was in danger of getting out of control. And what was worrying me is, you know, some of the Norwich players were starting to get a bit over-exuberant in challenges. And those are the sorts of games where we look comfortable. The last thing we need is some ranger decide to put a two-foot challenge in one of our better players. And then with big games coming up, then we lose them.
I hear you, Giannis. Very good analysis there. Before we go to the first half, Dan, I want to go back to you because Giannis brought up something that's been on my mind. I haven't talked to you about this, so I want to get your thoughts on this. What's going on with Niskanen Cabana? What can you take from all this? What has he not done to be in 18? He's a player that I really like on film and I think has huge potential. What do you think is going on here?
I don't know, Russ. I'm totally mystified by it. I think Niskanen is a real option to play naturally from the right side. He's got pace. And ability. There was a school of thought that he didn't do much tracking back at times, but I think he's got used to what's needed from the system. The only thing I can deduce from it all is it's clear that in his Fulham career, Cabano's been better as a substitute than as a starting player.
Yeah, that's true.
Why he doesn't, you know, Jokanović seems to really like Aite and Piazon, right? Aite, he frustrated me today. He frustrated me last week as well. Last week he would have done very well to frustrate me because I didn't watch him play. I meant against QPR. And I just feel Cabano offers you something different. But
yeah,
manager makes his choices, and he clearly likes Aite and Piazza, both of whom would probably agree that they're not in the finest form at the moment. I didn't think either of them had particularly good games today, and we'll get to that, I'm sure. You know, it's getting to the stage where, and I think Giannis would appreciate this, they're going to have to put Niskanen's picture on sort of milk cartons and milk bottles for us to find out where he is and what the problem is.
Yeah. I was just going to say that I'm wondering in the press conferences, you know, if the first question that's asked of Slava is just two words, Niskanen Cabana. And see, because where is he? You know, he's gone AWOL and I'm mystified by his exclusion. I think most fans are as well because he's done a pretty decent job. I've said it all along. I'm not the greatest fan of Aite. Cabana does offer a lot off the bench. To me, he's good enough to be on the bench at the very least, unless there's something we don't know about in terms of a disciplinary issue. That's all I can think of right now.
Yeah, it's a very interesting situation going on. Are you hearing anything at these pressers? Is anyone asking him about Cabana?
I haven't seen a definitive answer to that particular question. It's normally generally with injuries or is anyone unavailable or are you considering picking this player? But I think we might have to put some feelers out to see whether we can couch the question to him. I'm not sure if there is going to be a press conference prior to Leeds, but we'll find out and see if we can get an answer for you.
Okay, because I definitely want to know about this. It's just something that's been a puzzle. We're all talking about it. So obviously there's something going on there, and I hope we can get an answer to it. All right. Let's now talk about the first half. I think the two of you have mentioned that it certainly wasn't a great first half for Fulham. And personally watching it, Dan, I thought Norwich City were slightly the better side. In fact, they ended the half much better. They looked more dangerous, and I was – like you, not feeling great about it going into the half because they ended stronger. They just made all these mistakes. I'm talking about Norwich City. And you already mentioned that there was really only a few opportunities for Fulham. You had the shot by Kearney in the 11th minute, and then you had an opportunity for Norwich City in the 43rd minute, but there wasn't much more going on, Dan. How would you describe the first half? Let's just look at an overall picture, and then I'll go to Giannis.
Frustrating, agonizing, painful. I don't know how many words you want. It was excruciating. Maybe I'm being a little bit melodramatic with it, but I think the point I'm trying to convey was to people who weren't there, so you didn't have any confidence that, well, eventually one of these moves is going to come off, or, you know, at the moment the passes are being intercepted in a certain area, so you've just got to vary it a little bit. We just weren't able to dictate things. I spent a good few minutes looking at Kevin McDonald because I was quite alarmed that in the place where he was supposed to be, and he was there, he was often three against one in front of the Fulham back four. And you thought, well, the longer this goes on, the more of a problem it's going to be, and we'll do very well to escape without some serious punishment. The other thing that really frustrated me and frustrated him as well was Mitrovic was totally anonymous and isolated through no fault of his own. The ball just didn't get to him. And when it sort of got in his general vicinity, Norwich back four, because it was normally just launched up to him, and he was trying to hold it, and then he wouldn't see the ball again for another 10 minutes. And it's very difficult to build up the patterns of play that you would like to put some pressure on Norwich, because it was very fleeting that Fulham got into an area to hurt.
Okay, Dan. And it was really a difficult first half. I'm glad that you talked about Mitrovic, because, like you said, he was not seeing that much, and part of that has to do with just not getting the ball to him, and he was isolated, I guess is the best word to use. And you would not see him that often throughout the first half, and that must have been hard on him. Giannis, your analysis of the first half, and then we'll strike this and go to the second half.
Attritional. That's the one. It just, there were pockets. The first 20, we were okay. They came back into the game. But there were very few real chances created. We had one shot on goal. It was attritional. It was almost like trench warfare. And it was a little disappointing in the sense you've got two good sides. But then, you know, do you expect that with so many players away on an international break, you know, and the lack of preparation? I think the only thing that made it a little bit more palatable is the fact that where we are in the table and the gap between us and seventh means that, you know, the urgency of getting the win is tempered by the fact of where we are in comparison to the teams who are outside the playoff spots. We're looking now with the possibility, game by game, of maybe making a run at second. And so the urgency wouldn't have been as great. But so it almost at times felt like a mid-table, end-of-the-season game where two teams really don't have a lot to go for and they're feeling each other out and there's not a lot happening. But you sort of knew that with the rain beginning to drive in and the wind picking up, that and if Slava was going to throw the Serbian, whatever, as he decided, Serbian mugs or whatever, or Serbian hairdryers, you knew that second half they'd come out a little bit more intense and certainly more disciplined and maybe create more chances, and that's what happened.
Okay, excellent there, Giannis. All right, Dan, right back to you. Let's now transition to the second half, and I'll just start off by saying that Marcus Bettinelli stepped up in the 52nd minute. He made a save, and that's the first action that we have in the second half. But I think this is a key moment that I'm about to mention, Dan. You wrote about this, so I totally agree with you. I read this. I'm like, Dan's 100% right on this. The substitution of Floyd Ayite and Ryan Sessegnon coming on. Let's talk about this. Do you think this was, I guess you could say, a turning point bringing him on? And let's talk about how you saw it through your eyes being there, how things changed.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Just for the worry and the panic he induced in the Norwich defence, it was a turning point. Equally, we look more threatening in the way that we play with you know, genuine pace up in the forward areas. Obviously, Mitrovic gives you something different. No one's going to say he's fast, so you lose out on a little bit there. Well, Ite is genuinely quick, but he was just having an off day today. Piazon isn't especially quick either. And it just meant that Norwich had to rethink playing a high line against Fulham with Tessignon's pace. And of course, immediately he comes on and creates a couple of really good chances. He's a little bit unlucky not to score himself. And although he doesn't play much of a part in either of the goals, you can just sense that Norwich were uneasy from the moment he came on. I'm glad you brought up Marcus Bettinelli because that was a terrific save, Ross.
Absolutely.
I'm not quite sure how he got to it, never mind getting that strong hand to it and turning the ball aside in the way that he did. And arguably, that's probably the turning point because, you know, you'd be a little bit dispirited if you hit a shot that well and it doesn't go in. But... yeah, we were a bit more composed. I felt we were a little bit more patient on the ball. And gradually, people like Kearney and Johansson got into the game. And once they're able to dictate the pace of things, then you're always confident we'd create some chances. And the two goals were very well taken.
Absolutely, Dan. And I'll let you describe those in just a second. I'm glad that you mentioned the opportunity from Ryan Sessegnon in the 64th minute, that was that situation that was saved by Zimmerman, the center back there. But that was an opportunity from Ryan Sessegnon, and unfortunately he did not score there. But Dan, then we have the goal in the 66th minute by Stefan Johansson, but obviously it starts with the header from Alexander Mitrovic and rebounds and goes right to Johansson. He takes care of it from there. Let's talk about the opener for Fulham here.
Yeah, really nice move. We haven't talked much about Matty Target today, but he does really well for this goal, Russ, getting down the left-hand side. And he doesn't have a lot to aim at from the angle where he's crossing. He's just expecting Mitrovic to be in an area sort of between the centre of the goal and the back post. And I don't think Mitrovic particularly has to jump. He just powers the header, gets himself in a good position. It's a good save. And Johansson does really well because he doesn't panic. He's not right on top of the ball. When it rebounds, he has to make a little bit of ground. But there's that moment where you can see it dropping and you can see him wrapping his foot around it. He doesn't go for too much power. And he finished, makes a difficult finish as the ball sits up, look quite easy. And that was a real sort of nerve-settling moment because you were wondering when the clear chance was going to come. And we did exactly what we needed to do and reacted strongly to that second ball situation, you know. One of my criticisms of the system is sometimes we don't get enough players into the penalty area. But here, Johansson made a strong run, reacted quickly and finished it very well.
Okay, excellent, Dan. And I just want to mention, before we talk about the second goal, you have the substitution shortly after that of Kevin McDonald going off and Oliver Nowa coming on. Before I ask you about the second goal, what were your thoughts about this substitution?
Are you asking me, Ross?
Yes, Dan.
Yeah, sorry, mate. I think this was very simply, McDonald, I didn't think, had his best game. He'd also been booked and had another talking to from the referee. And it was the sort of game where you certainly didn't want to go down to 10 men. We've had that at Norwich. We had that last year, and it very nearly gave me a heart attack. So we certainly didn't need that again. And Norwood is such a dependable central midfielder. He doesn't do flash things. He can play a number of roles. He'll keep it simple and retain possession for you. And so I think those were, you know, you can depend on him. He's reliable. And that's why Slavisa made that made that alteration just to make sure we weren't gonna go down to 10 men.
That's a good point.
Anything else.
I was thinking about that, but I was trying to think if there was another reason for it to go along with the fact that he had a yellow and that he was fearful that he would get a second yellow there. But no, good point there, my friend. All right, let's now talk about the second goal for Fulham from Tom Kearney. Tom Kearney makes it 2-0 in the 70th minute.
Yeah, it's a nice little move. I didn't think we used the Fredericks overlap as much as we could, but here he was a very effective decoy. You'll correct me if I'm wrong, Russ. I think Kearney actually gets the ball in some space on the right side of central midfield, carries it forward and gives it out to Piazon. There's a lovely little flick from Johansson in the build-up that deserves a mention. And then here, I don't think Kearney scores enough of these goals, or he hasn't this season, probably because he's been injured for much of it. But he arrives late into the box. There's a bit of luck about it because Piazon is clearly trying to cross for Mitrovic and it's cut out, deflected, falls nicely for Kearney, and he hits it really well. Comes onto it, strikes it nicely. Very sweet finish, arguably off his wrong side. I think it was right-footed. I'm trying to remember now in my mind's eye. I can't picture it. But he hits it nice and true, and it just gives us that breathing space because at 1-0, you're always a little bit nervous. Arguably at 2-0, after the other week, we should be very nervous, and there are moments where we were.
Right.
But I think the devastating blow of the second goal following the first one really hit Norwich hard. It took them a while to recover any sort of composure.
I totally agree, Dan. And I'm glad that you described it that way. And Yanis, I'm going to go to you. I want you to talk about the end of this match and your overall assessment of the second half, because you've already talked about this and Dan mentioned it got chippy after that, all kinds of yellow cards. Talk about how this match ended.
Well, it's sort of weird because I thought the referee had a good, I thought he'd given a good performance until then. And things started to me, I think Fredericks got the first yellow and then all hell seemed to break loose. You know, you got Murphy got one, could have got a red. Norwood got one, and then you got Madison, who might have gone. It looked like stamped on one of our lads. Boo Boo got one, although that was questionable. Reed got one. That was six yellows, and it was a rough way to end. But at the end of the day, really, what was the most important thing is we took 3 points. And just thinking about going back to the halftime team talk and something that was an incident in the first half that really disappointed me, and I'm sure all the fans in Fulham fans in the stadium and around the world, and that was the flag and the Matthew Fox flag, because
yes,
we all remember what happened 20 years ago, and it's still we've all got teams we don't like, but I know that many Fulham fans don't like Gillingham, and that's one of the reasons why. And you know, it was a chance to honour the lad. He was only 24, and the fans weren't allowed to bring it in. And I just think that I think it was wonderful that the way after 20 minutes, the Fulham fans were applauding, which I thought was fantastic. Maybe Slava's sort of thing I would do as a coach is I'd go back and change him. Look, you know what? I find that Slava's an astute student of the game, and he knows a lot about the club. So I suspect he knew about this, and I suspect he knew the significance of today and may have gone back in and gone, you know what, one of our supporters went to a game 20 years ago and he didn't go back home. Let's put the effort in second half for him and nobody else, because we looked more charged up second half. And if that is the case, then great. I just don't like the way it ended. You know what? At the end, we got 3 points. We didn't do anything stupid. The Kevin Mack substitution I thought was smart because he was on a yellow. So all things being considered, we got the 3 points.
Okay, excellent. Dan, right back to you. Thoughts on what Yanis just shared there?
Yeah, I mean, I was at Gillingham. God, it
seems a long time ago. That day, as a quite young supporter, and I was absolutely terrified, because it was clear that something was going to go off that day, long before we got into the ground. I didn't know Matty Fox particularly well. I've got to know just by sitting near to some of his friends and family, and it was a very lovely tribute paid to him by the Fulham fans, and indeed by a number of Norwich fans as well, who stood up and applauded. You know, it may sound trite these days, but you know, nobody should go to a football match and not return home. And it was nice that we were able to pay tribute to Matty Fox and his family, who maintained their dignity at a very, very tough time. It must have been a very tough time for them, when, you know, the national newspapers were trying to make out that this was a hooliganism incident. And it was very fitting that we paid a lovely tribute both from the fans and also from the players to win that game.
Yeah,
it was lovely. There was a little bit of an edge later in the game. I don't really understand how that happened. What made me laugh was, I think Madison got particularly intense because Johansson reminded him what the score was. He didn't take too kindly to that. And Tom Kearney told him that a player of his ability should concentrate on playing football with his feet rather than throwing himself to the ground at every opportunity. And again, he didn't seem to like that either. Look, you know, it may not seem it, because Norwich haven't had their best season at home this year, and we've won. We've got a very good record here, but those were a very good 3 points.
I agree, Dan.
I think the hallmark of a really good side is getting the victories when you're not necessarily playing at your best, and we great certainly point. Weren't at our best today, and we got the victory.
Dan, I've been saying this on the show for a very long time now, when we've been winning matches like this, just finding a way to win. You might not be playing your best, but if you come away with all 3 points, that's the point, I guess. I looked at Brighton last season. How many times did we say this, looking at Brighton and Hove Albion? How did they win the match? They didn't look like the dominant team. It's about the 3 points, Dan.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think also you have to – Yanis was talking about sides playing, functioning as a team.
Yes.
Buying into a system. And the confidence that we've got in the game plan and the approach as much as anything, that even though it wasn't going well in the first half, nobody sort of lost their head. We're able to grind our victories, and there's an underlying sort of assurance amongst this squad of players that you know, if we keep doing the right things, then our chances will come. And there was no panic out there today. And that maturity is also important and could become very pivotal at the end of the season or even in the playoffs if we have to do that again.
Yeah, a very good point there, Dan. Great stuff by the two of you. All right, just for time's sake, I'm going to skip looking at the stats. We're going to go right to ratings. Okay, it's time for player ratings, and unfortunately, we will not have Yanis Shanaeus joining us, Dan. Something happened to his computer. Maybe a Norwich City supporter got to his computer or something, because it is not working. So it'll just be you and I to finish up. And what I will do is I will give you the ratings from Get West London's Ryan O'Donovan, and then you can share your ratings. And we'll just go through all the players. Sound good?
Yeah, let's do that, mate.
Okay, let's do it. Ryan O'Donovan, for this match against Norwich City, gives Marcus Bettinelli an 8. Do you agree with that, or what would you give him for a rating?
Yeah, so I wrote up some player ratings. It was my job today on the Fulham performances. I think on reflection, we'll probably go through them one by one, Russ, but I think I was a little less generous than Ryan to some of the Fulham players, which maybe on reflection was a bit harsh. I gave Bettinelli a 7, which is not to demean his overall performance. I thought he was excellent. It was just that he wasn't, apart from the one superb save that we've already talked about, he wasn't regularly tested by Norwich, as much as it looked like he might be in the first half, where they had a lot of the ball and quite a few chances. But, you know, I think we do have to remark on how well he's done since he's come back into the team, Russ. And we do look a lot more solid defensively than we did earlier in the season.
Okay, very good. So you give him a 7 and Ryan gave him an 8. Let's now go to the fullbacks. I'll give you both fullbacks here. Ryan gives Ryan Fredericks a 7 and gives Matt Target a 7.
Yeah, I went for the same. So I don't know about you, Russ, but I thought both Fredericks and Target were excellent. We often remark on how well they are, how well they do going forward, and how much they add to Fulham's attacking instincts. But I thought defensively they were both very good today. Fredericks had a very tough game up against Murphy, who was one of Norwich's more threatening players. But Target was equally composed, and you sort of wonder, where might Fulham be? Have we got Matt Target on loan in August rather than in January?
I agree with you, Dan. Great point. He's been very good. He's changed how we play in a very positive way, and I'm glad that we have Matt Target. All right, let's now go to the center backs. Mr. O'Donovan gives Adoy an 8 and Ream an 8. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I went for 2 sevens here because I still thought there were moments where both of them were made to look a little bit vulnerable. But you do have to credit Adoy massively, considering it's not his natural position, and also the character he showed, because he definitely made a mistake against QPR, and you have to show some courage in.
Well, he bounced back.
Jukanović kept faith with him. And he repaid that faith today with an excellent performance. And look, you know, Russ, you will know better than most just how good Tim Ream is. And it's nice to have a successful American in this successful Fulham side, given the American history we've got.
Yes.
And, you know, we can't pay tribute to Tim Ream enough because the transformation in him has been outstanding. You know, he's probably, I think I wrote today, he's probably the first choice centre-back now. And, you know, there was a period when Michael Mardle was here that he probably was only the fourth choice, and perhaps not even that at some stage. So you have to pay great credit to Tim Ream, which I'm sure you're not shy about doing, Russ.
I have no problem with that, Dan. Very good point. All right, let's now talk about the midfield three. They all got 7s. I'm curious your ratings for these players. You've talked about McDonald, Kearney, and Johansson. I thought Kearney and Johansson had a very good game. I would have gone higher than this. But Ryan O'Donovan gives them all 7s. Do you agree?
Yeah, I gave McDonald a 6. Thought he was a little bit off colour. And it wasn't one of his... we're used to McDonald being dominant and a really good passer. He wasn't quite at that level today, and then he got taken off quite early in the piece in the second half. 2 8s for Johansson and Kearney, because although they didn't start particularly imposingly, they finished the game very strong. Johansson scored an important goal, and obviously Kearney then added to that. And I just think when those two are on all real form, it's very difficult to live with Fulham. They're arguably two of the best central midfielders in the league, and could probably go at a higher level. So yeah, they made the difference today for me.
I totally agree. That's why I was a little bit surprised by Ryan's ratings on Johansson and Kearney, but that's why we do the ratings. You can agree or disagree on them. It's fun. All right, let's now talk about Lucas Piazon and Ford Ayite. Ryan O'Donovan gives Piazon a 7, Ayite a 6.
Yeah, I went for 2 6s because I felt like we were missing something in the wide areas for a lot of that game. Ayite has pace and he got himself into good positions today, but he didn't quite deliver for me. You know, we didn't quite take the right option at times, and I felt we were immeasurably better once Sessegnon replaced him. Piazon, just not his game today. Didn't quite impose himself on it. Credit to him, though. He kept going, and he made the second goal with a dangerous cross that eventually found its way to Kearney. But I think if you ask both of them, they would probably concede that they could have been a little bit better, Russ.
Yeah. Dan, very interesting interview I saw with Lucas Piazon on the Fulham website. He was actually very critical of his performance against QPR, even though he scored the goal. And I thought that really just showed confidence in the person and also just the type of person that he is, that he can admit that he wasn't at his best, even though he scored a goal.
I think he's a very honest footballer, Russ, and it's one of the reasons why people have warmed to him so much. He'll give everything for the cause and yet be quite open about when he's not quite been right. We should remember as well, he's doing well to be back at this level after another year that's been badly interrupted by injury. And I think really it's a sign of just how much strength we've got in that right wing position. I had a drink with our good friend Mike Gregg last night, and he was telling me about the discussion he had with you about who could play on the right side of midfield, and we've got so many options. You could even play Fredericks or Christie.
Yes, you could.
In those positions. So, yeah, look, I think the nature of football these days, it's very much a squad game, so people will come in and out. And, of course, you've got Niskins Cabano to fit in there. But, you know, Piazon is an immensely likeable guy because he's humble, he's honest, and, you know, I think he also appreciates just how lucky he is to be playing football too.
Yeah. I gained even more respect for him when I watched that. And, like you said, he's honest, and I like that about him, and that's probably why – one of the reasons why many Fulham supporters really like Lucas Piazon, and I'm glad that he's part of Fulham Football Club. All right, Dan, let's talk about Alexander Mitrovic. Ryan O'Donovan gives him a 6.
Oh, well, I went for a 7 because I think without Mitrovic's header, you wouldn't have had that first goal.
Very true.
And that was such an important moment. And Mitrovic is that sort of player. Today was a very good example of the fact that he didn't have a lot to do in the game, but when Fulham needed him to come up with something, okay, that header didn't go in like the one at Preston, but it was pivotal in creating the chance for Johansson to put us ahead. And I just think he's a real handful for defenders. They'll finish a game knowing that they've been in a real tussle with Mitrovic, because he'll definitely stretch the centre halves and give them all sorts of problems.
Okay, very good there, Dan. All right, let's talk about the substitutes. Ryan O'Donovan gives Ryan Sessegnon an 8, Oliver Norwood a 7, and Abubakar Kamara a 6. Your thoughts?
Yeah, so I went for a 7 for Sess. I think we've already talked quite a lot about his impact, and you know, I would expect him to start more games going down the stretch. But, you know, today just showed what weapon we have in such a young player when he's used wisely. He came off the bench. He gave us another option. And if you actually watch the first goal again, he comes inside, giving Target the option to cross the ball a little more freely, because a couple of Norwich players are a little preoccupied with Sessegnon's positioning and wanting to nullify him. You know, it's no surprise that he has a big impact. I went for 6s for the other two, because Norwood was steady without being exceptional, which is probably what Jokanović wanted at that stage in the game. And Kamara, I do love Kamara because he's a character. He'll do something to pique your interest, even if he's only on for 10 minutes. He wore some quite luminous green boots today. I don't know if they were go faster boots. There was just one moment where he looked like he might be in one-on-one with the keeper, but he just miscontrolled it a touch in trying to get away from the defender. But I think there's more to come from Kamara. I think he could be a real, you know, you imagine for a centre back, we've just talked about how Mitrovic can give them a real torrid afternoon, and then, you know, just for the last 10 minutes, you've got Kamara to come on and run you ragged. You know, that's right. Not an appetizing prospect for anybody who's a defender. Certainly,
I totally agree, Dan. Listen, I want to talk one more thing about Abubakar Kamara. I'm a fan. I want to see more of him because I think he has this potential that he hasn't reached who he's going to be as a footballer yet. He's just still getting to where he ultimately will be. Jim and Jamie on the broadcast that I watched were talking about the potential of bringing on Abubakar to play with Mitrovic. Would you do that?
Yeah, I think so. I think you know, you don't want to overly upset the balance of the team. But I think, you know, I'd certainly like to see the two of them together because it would be entertaining. And you've got to look back at how he's changed games as a substitute. He's come on and been really effective from the bench. You know, going back to those games against Middlesbrough and Cardiff, obviously against Hull just after Christmas. He was really the sole reason.
That Nottingham Forest match that he was.
Well, I thought I'd go back in that game. Yes, absolutely. He did really well at Nottingham Forest. Yep. And, you know, I just feel like you hit on something when you said earlier he hasn't quite realised what he's going to be because he was quite a late starter to football. And, you know, his technical level has improved just in the short time that he's been at Fulham. There's a lot more in his link-up play. He's more confident now. Also, he's still young, yes. You know. He's got plenty of time to develop, and I think that's one we have to keep our eye on because there's been a staggering improvement in his level, and he can only get better, which will be excellent.
Yeah, absolutely, Dan. And then, you know, listen, here we are. We're talking about Tim Ream. I know Tim Ream's further along in his career, but if you saw where he began at Fulham and where he is now, you can see that obviously that a player can improve within a club over a course of period of time, and I think Kamara could do the same. And that's why I wanted to bring it up. And I just remember Jim and Jamie talking about the potential of playing them together. I thought that would be interesting. I wouldn't be against seeing that. So that's why I wanted to pose that to you. All right. Who was your man of the match?
I'd probably give it to Johansson, Russ. But I think either Johansson or Tierney or Ream or Bettinelli. So a few contenders today.
There are some definite contenders there. Okay. Let's now finish up. Let's just talk about Slavica. He obviously had some decisions to make here, Dan. Let's rate the head coach from 1 to 10. What would you give Slavica for this match if you were going to rate him?
I'd give him an 8, I think. I don't know where you'd be edging towards, but he got his key decision right, which was when to bring on Sessegnon with the way the game was panning out. And he changed the game with his substitutions, yep. Which is not something. You know, we sometimes criticised Slavica. I know he got a lot of criticism after the QPR game for the,
yes,
for the timing and the type of changes he made. But today he got it spot on. And, you know, I think he could be extremely satisfied, even though he's only satisfied, Rob.
I didn't notice that, Dan. Now every time I read one of the head coach reactions, I'm going to be looking for it.
Yeah, look, I don't think you can speak highly enough of the job Jukanovic has done. Yeah. And he's got us in a great position. You know,
he does.
I still think that, you know, Cardiff might have a little stumble in the coming weeks. It didn't happen today, unfortunately. But we're in a good position to take advantage of that if it comes. And, you know, it's nice to be sitting here thinking maybe another win. Another two wins. I know Mike will have the definitive answer for us on this. We'll secure us a playoff spot, and we're not scrapping around for that sixth place again.
Yeah.
At the end of the season, which is great. So you can't give Slavica too much credit. I remember when the last few times I was a regular on this show, you know, people were talking about getting rid of Slavica, and boy, am I glad we didn't do that, Russ.
There was some talk about that, Dan. Not coming from me, just so you know. It wasn't definitely not coming from me. It's very interesting, Dan. And before we go, because we're talking about this wonderful run, and I did this with Mike, and you just have to look back and appreciate exactly what's going on here. And you've been a Fulham supporter for a very long period of time. You saw some very good seasons from Fulham. Have you seen a run like this? And again, we could talk about the Europa League run, you know, season under Tagana that was so magical. Where does this rank? What's going on right now?
It's pretty high up there. I think for the quality of the football and the confidence that the players have, and also, you know, we've come from a long way, you know, languishing in mid-table and further than that. I know it dates back beyond the run, but I remember coming back from Wolves in October, November time, and we were 17th at that point.
That's right.
And that was when people were really starting to agitate about Jokanović. I think regardless of how this season finishes up, and obviously we all want to get promoted, but you know, you have to sort of take a step back and acknowledge what is happening here.
Special.
We have a tremendously talented group of players that are bought into a system, and we're playing some excellent football. And even when we're not playing completely spellbinding football, we're winning matches, which is not something many Fulham fans can recall that often. You know, we're not used to these moments of success. And I have to say, going and watching Fulham is an eminently enjoyable experience these days. And that's largely down to what Slavisa and his fellow coaches have happened to do, which is brilliant.
It is, Dan, and that's why I'm glad that we're ending talking about it. And it's just, you know, again, I just remember some good times and there have been some bad times, and I'm just going to enjoy the rest of this season and see where it takes us. And I look forward to these last seven matches and, knock on wood, playoffs, and who knows, maybe not even playoffs. Maybe it's something else. I kind of don't want to go there. I keep saying I'm not going to talk about second, and Mike keeps telling me, Russ, stop with the second, because he knocked some sense into me with his statistics, and he's right about that. But regardless, I'm going to enjoy the end, Dan. Listen, thank you so much for joining me. You are in Norwich right now, so I really appreciate you coming on with me tonight.
Okay. Real pleasure to join you on the show. Always enjoy doing it, and hopefully we can all enjoy our Easter weekend with those lovely 3 points.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Dan. And listen, I also want to thank Yanis Janaeus for joining us earlier. Unfortunately, Yanis had some computer issues, so he wasn't able to finish up, but Dan and I were able to go through the player ratings and talk about Savice at the very end. All right. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Cottage Talk. For Dan Crawford from Hamian.com and Yanis Janaeus, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk.